It's a very happy birthday for Nigel Adkins as Reading pick up all 3 points at Leeds while it's fun in the sun on the south coast with a point at Brighton. We look back over Reading's week as the rollercoaster of a season continues. In Pub Chat, we ask whether this is Reading's most inconsistent season in recent times, while we also answer your tweets and emails as the Federici v McCarthy debate rages on. All that and more on this week's Tallest End podcast, episode number 26. Slowly creeping our way towards 100.
It's a lot, 26 already.
It is, yeah. The voice you just heard, is that of Mr. Alan West? Westy, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not so bad, thanks. My name's Dan, and I'm the editor of the Tallest End. If you're just new to the show, welcome. Where have you been for the last 26 episodes?
Or 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. Or before that. Well, we'll come on to the older podcast a little bit later on. Okay. But yeah, let's start. Let's cast our minds back a little while to last weekend. Reading travelled to the Amex Stadium to face Brighton on the back of that draw with eight-man Yeovil. Once again, they ended up playing a team who didn't finish with 11 men. And once again, they finished with a point. But, Westy, was this a better performance for you than the one-all draw with Yeovil, this one-all at Brighton?
Yeah, much better. I think we spoke last week and I said that Brighton and Leeds are two difficult away games, especially Brighton, and judging by their result this week again against QPR, a 2-0 win. They're a good side, Brighton, and they play nice football. And we said that Reading might struggle to get a result there. Our people complained that Brighton ran down to 10 men, but as far as I see, by a bit of good fortune or better finishing from Blackman and McEnough, they probably would have won the game. So I'm saying at the start of the game, I would have took 1-0 at Brighton, and that's exactly what happened. So I think it's a good result.
Yeah, I would have taken a 1-0 if you talked to me before the game, but I think what's most frustrating for me personally is the amount of times Reading got within sight of goal and either had shots charged down or, as you mentioned, missed them. I mean, it's great that they broke this hoodoo. I mean, we've been talking about it for weeks now. Whenever Reading go behind, they struggle to get anything from games.
Yeah.
So to go behind and grab a point, I said it, a playoff rival, it's not just getting a point, it's denying them too. So good result. But could it and should it have been three? Who knows? I mean, the goal, let's go back to the start of the game. I mean, the goal that Reading did concede in the first half, Brighton were, you know, not that much of a threat. And the goal we gave them was just silly. And I said in the intro, we'll be coming on to McCarthy v Federici a bit later on, but this one didn't cover McCarthy nor Chris Gunter in glory as Gunter nodded in the own goal.
No, an annoying thing is that's two games on the trot where we've given teams goals and they've got points against us. I mean, Yeovil was a clanger, I thought.
Oh, keeper, and Blackburn as well, yeah, if you think
keeper,
about it.
Yeah, keeper came out of nowhere. He's never going to get the ball, didn't. This week, it was just a simple miscommunication. He's come for a ball. Gunter should have had a bit more experience not to head it straight back to the middle of the goal, but even so, he obviously didn't get a shout. And it's a goal they've given away when they probably shouldn't have done. And that's disappointing from our point of view. But again, we've come from behind. We're at a championship rival, like you said. And I think, judging by, especially with the result this week against Leeds, I think really looking back, you think 4 points out of them two games. I think I said at the start of, or the end of last week's podcast, if Reading can get 4 points out of two games, we'll be happy about it. And again, if you look at that playoffs now, it's real getting tight down the bottom because Forest and QPR are getting sucked in as well.
Absolutely. It's certainly shaping up to be a fantastic race. So, ready to go into that half-time at Brighton, 1-0 down. They come out with a bit of purpose in the second half. Try hard to get the goal. And before I move on to that, I should mention as well the changes that we made coming into this game.
Yeah.
Because with the international break the week before, there were plenty of players who were only coming back to the club on Friday. So, Nigel Adkins did ring the changes. The likes of Royston Drenter, Michael Hector came in for his full debut. Nick Blackman got a start and Danny Guthrie came in as well. And it was one of those players that actually got our equaliser in the game, Royston Drenter. Now, we've been on the Drenter bandwagon, we've been off. Slowly over the past few weeks, I'm going to blow my own trumpet here. I have said I think he's still got something in the locker. And we'll come on to Leeds later on, but I said this is his first goal for the club and it was a bit of a rocket as well.
Yeah, it was a good goal. And again, he's got that. He's been having these shots, I think, last week. I mean, the power in his shots is well known. You can see that when he's warming up or when he does manage to get a shot off. But you spoke last week and I totally agree with you. Although people might look back and say, oh, Westy, we're slating Drenter. I never slated him. I just said that I don't think we should be praising him too much because this should have been happening all season. Now, why it wasn't or how it wasn't is still up for debate. I don't know. But you said last week that Drenter could be the difference between staying in this division and getting promoted. And I've said all along, he's got the ability, he's got the talent, but it's whether he's going to do it or not. And over the last two games, he's doing it. And he is the player that should be taking the championship by storm because we know that he's better in this division. He knows he's better in this division. It's whether he can do it consistently. Two games, you know that he can come up with something special where most of the others can't.
Yeah, I mean, I've been using the analogy all week that for me, I think Drenter can have a similar effect to what Carlos Tevez had at West Ham. And if you remember, when Tevez first went to West Ham, he was touted as one of the best players in the world. Everyone was saying, "Have West Ham got Tevez and Mascherano as well?" And suddenly, something clicked, and he basically single-handedly kept them up. And if Royce N'Drenthe scores, you know, what have we got, 11 games left, if he scores 7-8 goals in that, you know, I think we'll be in the playoffs.
Is this another case of Nigel Atkins' great man management? We talked about Paul Grebniak being completely off the boil. Drenthe's obviously, we talk about foreign players quite a lot, struggling to settle. He struggled to settle. We know he's got the ability. I've called him unprofessional. I just think sometimes he should do more than he does. But his work rate was much better over the last two games. If he can get his match fitness, and he's had nearly two full matches now, again, he can be the difference. And I thought, personally, where he played against Leeds was better than having him on the left wing, because it keeps him more interested in the game. And they can't mark him. It's a struggle for him to mark him. But I would say he's done some great defending, especially against Leeds this week, so that's good.
Yeah, I mean, you still, if you are a bit slightly negative, you still say he's not really a 90-minute player. You still wouldn't really trust him beyond the sort of 70-minute mark.
But then it doesn't have to be, you know what I mean? If the game's won, it doesn't matter if he goes off the pitch.
No, and hopefully as well, if he is in form, it does lessen the pressure on the likes of Lafondre, Pogrebniak, McCleary. They know that, oh, if I don't fire, and we've been talking about this all season, about Reading having a plan B, especially on the pitch from the players they already start with. And as I said, it gives them a completely different outlook.
We also spoke about it all season, about Reading not being able to stretch teams. But this week, I know we're going to move on to these games, so sorry to get ahead, but this week, when you've got Hal Robson-Kahn, you've got Drenthe, you've got McCleary, and you've got Makhanov on either wing, and you've got Obita and Gunter behind them, all of a sudden, you've got players that can stretch teams because they've got pace, genuine pace throughout the side. And that's what we lack up front with Alfie and Pogrebniak, because if teams sit in, Reading can't stretch them. With those two up front, they can.
Yeah, as I said, the only real downside from this Brighton game, before we move on for me, was Joby Makhanov again. I'll tell you what, if you had to pick a player who you thought was going to score a one-on-one, and you had to bet on one player, I'd bet on anybody but Joby, because he's woeful in front of goal.
I think I spoke when he first signed for the club, I said, Joby Makhanov's goal record is something like 1-in-12, and you can see why.
I'll take that right now.
Because he can't finish for love nor money, but I thought Blackman had the better chance, and Blackman should be able to finish because he's a £1 million striker. So all Blackman had to do during this game was to slot the ball into the corner. He didn't have to blast it, just pass it in. It was a great opportunity. But then, saying that, Brighton had some good chances at the end of that game. We could have easily lost it.
So. Absolutely. And some Brighton fans have complained about the red card for Greer, saying the second...
No, I thought it was a sending off.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's body checked him. He's gone past him, he's body checked him. It's a booking all day long. Just reading book before, what difference does that make?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't disagree with that. As I said, not the worst point, not the best point, but they moved on to Leeds. And I suppose not winning the Brighton game did put a bit of pressure on Reading going into that game.
Yeah.
But Leeds are going to be under even more pressure. And they got absolutely thumped by Bolton at the weekend going into that game.
And their confidence was absolutely shot from the beginning of that game to the end, because they knew that the crowd were going to turn on them. And as soon as Reading scored, the crowd did turn on them. And then passes started going astray. Even the goal we scored really was comical by them. And fair play to McCleary, because he noticed the mistake was coming and he latched onto it. And again, that helps to have that pace going forward.
Yeah,
but,
I mean...
But Leeds were shot.
Honestly. Yeah, I mean, McCleary was one of the three changes Nigel Atkins made. He came in, as did Joby Makhanov, returning from injury, came back into starting lineup. And Kasper Gorks came in as well. Now, just before we talk about Gorks and Pearce in that game, Michael Hector making that full debut at Brighton, as we mentioned. Mm-hmm. Do you think he can consider himself a little bit harsh to have lost his place for the Leeds game?
I don't know if it's a little bit harsh. I think Gorks and Pearce, although I've slated them quite regularly, I think they're steady in this division. It depends what you're coming up against. I mean, Hector's a lot quicker than them two. And maybe they thought at Leeds are going to have more of an aerial threat with McCormack and players like that. And I think Pearce and Gorks on the night won pretty much every header. So they've done what it was there for. Again, against a faster striker, maybe Hector will come in. I think really Atkins is just testing the water for him for next year and keeping him involved in the squad so he signs a new contract.
Yeah, and it gave Gorks a much-needed rest as well. Because, you know, he's travelling all over Europe with Latvia. He's been playing every game. He's no spring chicken either. With Sean Morrison seemingly gearing up for a return to fitness in the next couple of weeks as well, it is good. And as I said, the more options you've got, even if you don't use them, the fact that you can use them is a good thing.
It's so good. And again, our squad's only getting stronger now as the course of the season goes on. If everyone can stay fit, you've still got two good players to come back into that side if they're good enough to be selected. And if Reading keep winning, the competition for places in that side is massive now. And with the point we're getting to the end of the season, 10 games left, intense near the end.
Yeah.
We've got plenty of numbers. Cliche, but it technically they are like new signings. We haven't seen them all season.
Exactly, exactly. Well, we mentioned about Reading's team changes. We joked about, you know, a load of former Royals, obviously one touchline, Brian McDermott on his anniversary of his sacking.
I thought he might get another sacking by the end of this week.
Well, we've got a question about that later. There was no place for Jimmy Kebby in the 18, and Noel Hunt didn't get off the bench, so... No.
I don't think Noel Hunt's well-liked at Leeds at the moment. After Dudley scored down there, he's not playing, and when he is, I don't think he's impressing anyone or putting up any trees.
No, he's certainly not had the best of time down at Leeds. I think he's admitted himself. He's not done too well. I think he went some months without a start. I think he got a rare one at Middlesbrough of the week. But
to be fair, I think we've had the best years out of Hunt. I think we had the best years out of his brother as well, to be fair. I think Hunt's getting towards the end of his career, and that's just the way it goes.
He needs to have good players around him. But he can also bring out the best in other players. I mean, look at...
You could
players,
hit him.
Yeah, but look at players like Shane Long, Jason Roberts, Kevin Doyle, all had great spells at Reading, playing alongside Noel Hunt.
So. He always worked hard, and his brother did as well, but you can hit Noel Hunt. So if you're playing that sort of football, great. If you're not, then it's not much use having him out there.
No, well, as you mentioned, Reading quiet first 25 minutes or so. And then Gareth McCleary gets an absolute gift thanks to future England keeper Jack Butland and Jason Pearce. If Alex McCarthy's having a bad time, that one doesn't reflect well on Butland either. Just, again, slightly similar to McCarthy and Gunter at Brighton, a complete miscommunication.
But it showed their nerves, Lee. Yeah. There was nervy all night. Some of the passes were going astray, left, right and centre, really. And again, fair play to McCleary because he noticed the mistake was coming and he latched onto it and scored a good goal. And I guess what he's got in his locker, because you know he's got the pace to make a difference. And if he's on his game, he's unplayable.
Absolutely. And it showed the commitment and the drive of him because he chased down what was seemingly a lost cause.
Yeah,
and
he did.
If you chase balls like that, you're a reward. So.
And it goes back to us saying earlier in the podcasts that Reading have changed all of a sudden.
Absolutely. So they're going 1-0 at half time and you kind of expect a reaction from the home. So as I said, they've been thumped at the weekend by lowly Bolton, and it's a game, let's be honest, if Leeds wanted to have any realistic, they needed to win that game. So you expect them to come out of the blocks after half-time, in great shape, a couple of minutes in, Royston Drenthe gets a free kick, and just curls it beautifully into Butland's top right-hand corner.
Yeah, it seemed like he'd hardly put any effort into it either, did it as well, he sort of just booted in the top corner, thanks very much, and like we said, he's got that, he can do that. Just going to see it more often, especially with only 10 games left or so.
And goals like buses, so we wait all season for one and he gets two in two games.
But it's good because he looks like a confidence player. So if he's scoring goals all of a sudden, he's going to want to play more, he's going to work harder, and that can only benefit the whole team.
Well, hopefully he can keep that sort of free kick consistency up because we have struggled really from set piece this year. Yeah. We've had quite a lot of free kicks in and around the box, especially at home when, you know, we've seen teams defending really deep. We do get these free kicks and, you know, Jordan Abita has just been slamming them into the wall.
I mean, we haven't really had that many free kick specialists, have we? I mean,
Hart,
Caskin, Shorey. Even Shorey didn't score a lot of goals for free kicks. His delivery was good. But in general, we haven't had free kick experts
for years.
No, again, Caskey was good at free kicks. But other than that, and Hart, that was about it, really.
Yeah. So I said it adds another weapon to Reading's arsenal. So a couple of minutes later, they grab another one, and Nick Blackman. He'd come off Gareth McCleary, who'd hobbled off injured with what looks like a groin injury. There's no timetable on his return at the moment, but Nigel Atkins was hoping it wasn't too serious. Mm-hmm. So Blackman came on for McCleary and gets Reading's third goal on the night. Had a hint of offside about it, but again, he was in the right place at the right time and nodded it in.
He gambled, and that's what we've been complaining about a lot recently, people not gambling. He's gambled and he's gotten the end of it. And at 3-0, especially coming out of the blocks that quickly, you thought Leeds were dead and buried. You know, with Reading, they always let someone in. They always give someone a chance.
No, and the Reading didn't even wait. I mean, Reading made it 4-0 for a start.
Yep.
Hal Robson-Kanu, how much have we said this season? Where's the Hal Robson-Kanu from last season?
Yep.
Watch that goal from Leeds. The amount of power he's got rampaging down the left, cutting in and slamming a shot in. That's vintage Robson-Kanu.
Well, he's got it. That's what annoys you about him, because he doesn't do it consistently, ever. And he'll have another two games where you don't see him. But I thought up front on his own, I thought he kicked the ball well. And his first touch, in general, was really good. And like I said, he can stretch teams because he's quicker than Pogrebniak and Lafondre. And people were moaning about Lafondre not playing. But if you can score four goals... I mean, I remember hearing some of the things on the Radio Berkshire before the match. People were going, oh, how can you play a team without any strikers? And I thought, well, they have got two
strikers. Spain have done it.
They're
world champions. Yeah. Let's make a quick note there that I'm not comparing Reading to Spain.
No, not even tactically. No.
I think Alex Pearce might struggle to get in that 11.
I think he might struggle a little bit. He won't be the only one.
And again, credit to Nigel Atkins for picking that team. And we've got questions about whether he's a tactical genius or a stroke of luck. So talk about that a little bit later on.
Well, it's one result, isn't it? If they'd have got beat last night, everyone's saying, why has he left Lafondre on the bench? You know what I mean?
And for all our talk of tactics, Reading, from being 4-0 up very nearly, that leads right back into the game because they get two goals in a matter of minutes. First, Matt Smith gets on the end of basically a bit of head tennis in the box and prods home. Nothing McCarthy could really do. But the second from Randolph Austin, he hits it from 25 yards. I've watched it a couple of times. I'm not sure whether it gets a little deflection or not. But
no, I didn't want from the angle I see it from. No, I don't know. But from 25
yards... It does
yards,
beat McCarthy a little bit easily for my liking.
From 25 yards, you'd expect to have done better. On this occasion, it's not made a difference because we've gone on to win the game. But it did make for a nervy sort of 20 minutes or so when you thought, oh, if I get another one now, we could throw away a 4-0 lead.
And Reading finished the game with six defenders on the pitch. They were, you know, really shutting up shop.
Again, fair enough. You know, it's two goal lead with 10 minutes left, put everyone behind the ball. I think the game I'm going to point at is McDermott's game against Arsenal when they was two goals with no time left and we still ran paging forward.
My dad was at Allen Road last night and made the comments to me speaking to him today. He was saying the only thing that disappointed about the whole game was how Reading completely lost their way when Leeds scored those goals, and it was panic stations. And again, it does lead you to wonder about the intelligence. And we talked last week about their sort of nous and getting goals in at one end. And sometimes you wonder whether they've got the composure needed to hold down to Leeds as well. And we've seen it earlier this season, you know, Blue Leeds against Millwall. They went through a phase earlier in the season, didn't they? Just completely chucking away Leeds. Barnsley away as well.
Watford, did we lead against Watford?
Yeah, 3-1 and 2-0, didn't we?
There you go.
So, yeah, again, hopefully they're just learning from these things. But in the end, 4-2, can't complain at all. So the only negative is the McLeary injury. Hopefully it's not too serious, but so it's a, you know, we're at the stage now, we cliche, but six pointers. And that was a six pointer for Reading.
And coming up Saturday, that's another one.
Yeah, against Derby. So do you think that's it for Leeds now?
Oh, yeah, they're dead and buried. I think you can rule out anyone from Blackburn down, really. I think no one else is going to make a push. I think you've got Brighton, have got a game in hand. Wigan have got two games in hand. Hopefully they'll be distracted by another fantastic FA Cup run for the club. I'm just thinking that if you look around, I think Forest are getting sucked down, QPR are getting sucked down. I think Derby should be safe. But other than that, I think there's probably Ipswich and Wigan, us, Brighton, Derby, not Derby, Forest and QPR. I think that last two places, three places in the playoffs could be anyone's.
Absolutely. I said, for me, Wigan are on just such a roll.
Yeah, it's just consistency now. If Reading can just keep, especially their home games, you look at their home games, they just keep consistent and just turn these sides over like they should, or they should have been doing all season and haven't, end up in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's a massive service. And it's funny, isn't it? I mean, we come here every week and at the start of every show, it seems to be, well, that's it. It's done. And then the next week, how often do we say that? You know, it's typical Reading.
Yeah, we just sit in
bad result and then go and get it.
But all season, we've stuck in there or thereabouts and we never really drifted too far away from it. Even when we sort of gone down to eight, if you didn't, we'd only 4 points or so or 3 points, but never too far away. There's a lot of clubs now. I think QPR start looking over their shoulder because they're pulling in some real bad results.
Yeah.
And Forest are not the best team in the world. I think we've played them twice now, and not once did I think they were amazing.
I don't think there's a single team in the league that Reading have played, even Leicester. Yeah. Reading only lost 1-0, and that was during their worst period this season.
Derby ain't a great side either. They had a good run when he first got there, but they're starting to slip a few points here and there now. I think they'll be all right because they're a bit further in front. But other than that, Ipswich, a funny club, they keep picking up results here and there. Blackburn, I think they're too far behind. And Wigan, like I say, if they're distracted by the FA Cup, anything can happen.
All you need is one team to go on a storming run. Definitely. Blackburn suddenly win 7 out of their last 11 games that they're in.
I think it'd be unlikely, though. You know what I mean? Blackburn haven't shown enough to say they're going to do that.
I still think, personally, I'm still leaning towards, I think Reading might just miss out. I just think that the way they haven't been able to kill off teams like the Yeovils, the Sheffield Wednesdays, the Blackburns, I'm just not convinced if teams come to the Medeski Stadium and rock up that they'll have enough now to get past them. But I'd be delighted to get proved wrong. I think they're going to be in the race to the very end.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It will go to the wire.
And I said they might get a little bit of help from elsewhere if other teams do continue to be in free fall. And I said Wigan playing Saturday, Tuesday every week, you know, they could quite easily pick up a couple of injuries and that bit of them.
And again, the FA Cup, they've got as a distraction, so anything could happen. I'm looking forward to it now. It looks like it's really hotting up nicely.
Well, that just about wraps up this week's action. Let's move on to a few news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Forgot to mention, our regular co-host, Johnny Williams, isn't with us today.
Yeah, we was worried that you might be sat there thinking, Johnny's been quiet today.
Yeah, he just didn't really have much to say.
Yeah, he's sitting on the fence as usual, so he's just keeping completely out of it.
Yeah, no, Johnny's at Cheltenham today. We're recording slightly earlier, so he couldn't make it for today's recording, so... Yeah, if anything goes wrong this week, just blame it on him.
Or when it goes wrong.
Indeed. Hope he's having better luck on the horses anyway.
Yeah, as usual, he's quite lucky with the horses.
He is. He's a bit of a demon in that circumstance. But anyway, news bites. Not a lot going on for Reading this week. I said, spoke to Charles for the podcast extra on Friday. A couple of bits of injury news. Obviously, Sean Morrison's back in training, as is Wayne Bridge. So, as we mentioned, it's good to have those options coming back. But still no real timetable on Mikael Leisurewood, and I think we're writing Jason Roberts off at this point.
I think we can write off Leisurewood as well. I don't think you ever see him play for Reading again. I can't see it happening. He's out of contract next year. this year, sorry. He's not played all season. When he did play in the Premier League, he didn't look good enough. I think the last you've seen of him, to be honest.
Yeah, a bit of a shame, because I still think if he could get back up to speed, he would be useful, even if it was for three or four games in the season.
I'll say that. I think I said that about Gorks as well. Now he's been a main man all through the season.
It's so a long time, though. For someone, you've just got to consider that even if he got back into full training today, he's not played football. I think he played one half of the under-21s a few months ago and had a setback. So the amount of time it takes to get to match fitness.
Especially as a midfielder as well. You have to be up to speed pretty quick. You can sit in defence, maybe at right back or centre back, and sort of coast for a few games if you're lucky. I just can't see him playing for Reading again.
I still think he's got something to offer a club, whether it's Reading or somebody else.
Yeah, I'm not saying he hasn't got something to offer, but I just think from the direction the club's going in, and again, the ownership stuff and the money, I think he will be earning a decent wage, and I think they think we can get rid of him because he's been of no use to us, really, to be fair, all season.
Yeah, I mean, the only bit of news, obviously there was a good win for the under-21s against Bolton earlier this week, but the big youth team news, FA Youth Cup quarter-final action, they probably would have finished by the time you hear this podcast, so it's not really worth us talking too much about it. Fingers crossed they win. And if they do win, it'll be a first place in the semi-finals.
Yeah, again, we've spoke about the youth system quite a lot, and it looks excellent at the moment, and that can only be good for the first team.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, I said not an awful lot to talk about news bites, really.
It's always the same, though, this time of year, because obviously the transfer speculation's all over. Yeah. Clearly, we're not going to get anyone on loan because we haven't got any money. So, other than stuff that goes on around the club, injuries and
That's just about it for news bites this week. So let's move on to pub chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, welcome back to pub chat. I think that's the quickest news bites we've ever done.
If there's no news, you can't give no bites on it, can
you? No news is good news.
No news is good news, is it?
Well, pub chat as well this week. I think we've exhausted quite a few of the topics recently, but on the back of what has been a real rollercoaster season for Reading, I just wanted to throw out the idea to you that, do you think this is Reading's most inconsistent season in recent memories that you can remember? Because for me, usually we either seem to be pretty good all season long, or, you know, we've been pretty awful and got relegated.
I think actually, if you look back in the history of Reading FC over the last 5 or 6 years, we tend to have one really great half of a season and then a dreadful one. I think when we come down with Coppell, I think the first part of the season we was excellent, and then all of a sudden the back half of the season we couldn't win at home, and that's why we ended up not getting promoted. I don't think we've been inconsistent. I suppose we've been consistently inconsistent, but like I said earlier, we've sat around that sixth position for quite a long time. So is that inconsistency? I don't think it is.
I just think it's in terms of the performances. How I don't remember a Reading team that can go and play so well at a team like QPR and in that first half against Watford, and then look so utterly clueless against teams like Millwall, Yeovil,
Borough,
Sheffield Wednesday, Borough. And it's been a lot of the same players. I know they've had a lot of injury problems over the course of the season, but it's been so up and down. And I can't remember really. I think you almost have to go back to almost the Jim and Mick days for me. That team would just have a really random. Do you remember they'd beat like a Wolves or a Bolton.
Oh yeah, then lose to someone random. Has he, apart from in recent weeks, has he been able to keep a consistent 11? Because I mean, if you look at the start of the season, I think Bridge would have started. Abitta was nowhere near the team. Carajam started. Now we obviously got injured; he couldn't play. Podgorevnik was bang out of form, and then all of a sudden he was in form. Lafondre's been in and out of the side. He's been on form, off form. I just think Reading haven't had a consistent 11. I think recently they have. We said they've been working harder for one another, but it's just a style of play that's been inconsistent for me. Because 1 minute they're banging it as long as they can and sending big balls up to Lafondre, who's got no chance. They're trying to play football. That's the only thing I'd say they've been inconsistent about. But is it horses for courses? Has he done it thinking, well, we're not really passing that well. Some teams we have to bang up against and some teams we can try and play. I really don't know.
It's just for me, I can't remember a team week to week being as up and down as this.
I think it's been performances of players more than anything, though, because McCleary, when he's on form, it can be great, but I've sat and watched other games, I think he's not got involved in the game. Lafondre as well. One minute he's banging in two hat-tricks, next minute he looks completely off the boil. No, exactly. And Podgorevnik, start of the season, looked awful, and then all of a sudden he looks great, and again he's sort of been average over the last couple of weeks. I think it's the consistency of the players more than anything that's been inconsistent, because if they're all bang on it, we know that they're good players in this division, but they haven't been bang on it. Trent is a prime example.
Yeah, I suppose the only thing is, I think that they lack, I don't want to say spirit, because that's one thing Reading teams don't lack, but they lack almost a killer instinct. They don't as we mentioned, they don't quite know how to get themselves over the line like other Reading teams.
I think there's a certain amount of truth in the fact that the spirit is not what I've seen before.
Well, we were saying for the first half of the season there was a distinct lack of smiles, wasn't there?
There definitely was, and I think we spoke about it quite a lot, that players weren't working as hard as I thought they could. And that's starting to drift back into the side now. I mean, Guthrie had a great game against Leeds, and again, his performances, the first part of the season, very good. Completely tailed off, and then he's come back in and he looks bang on it again. Akpan wasn't even anywhere near the side. No one would have picked him in a million years.
Wasn't even getting picked up on loan, was he?
No, he's come back in, and although, you know, he does give the ball away a bit cheap sometimes, he's got that sort of driving force where he will keep going all the match. So players' performances, individual performances that have been consistent, not so much the team ethic, if that makes any sense.
No, it does. It makes a lot of sense. I suppose other seasons, that first season we had both Pardew and Coppell, again, floated between. I remember early days under Pardew, they were looking really good in the league. And then Coppell came in and had a few really bad results. I think they got stuffed at home by Wimbledon.
Yeah,
some other teams as well. And even the season after that, I remember we were doing really well up till Christmas. And the wheels just completely fell off.
I suppose the question is, has the manager turned the corner from the start of the season? Has Atkins starting to turn it around? Has he listened to the players? Has he looked at the players? Has he thought, this is how I can get them to play for now?
He's coming up to a year now, Nigel Atkins, as Reading manager. And I still don't know what to make of him. I really don't know if I think, this is a good manager, I want him to take us forward. Is he making too many changes? Is he making the wrong changes? I don't know. I think the jury's out.
The thing is he learning about the side?
But can you say, watching that very first game under Nigel Atkins at Arsenal to watching that game against Leeds, do you think Reading have moved forward?
No. I don't think they've moved forward particularly. But someone was saying today that Bridge is worse than McDermott's when he got sacked. But I said, yeah, but to be fair, there was 10 games in the Premier League.
Right.
And I thought when they played against Fulham, I thought they were excellent that day. And again, they give away some cheap goals at the end and kept us all nervy. I just think he tried to do something that he couldn't do at the moment, and he learnt that lesson eventually. And now, I think he's still learning about the players. So I think a lot of them have not given him 100%, but not shown what they could do.
And I think he's
how Robson Carney.
And I think he's had to trust players more than he probably thought he would, because I would imagine he came into this job thinking, well, I can ship out some of these players.
And to be fair to him, he's took players out of the side. There's been a bit of unrest. He's put them back in, give them the opportunity again. And now and again, he's took them back out. But if they've proved him wrong, he will keep them in. He's not one of these managers that's like, OK, well, I don't think you're good enough, so you're out completely. He will back down if he thinks someone is offering him something that maybe he didn't think they could. And Fondra's a prime example.
And Hope and Akpan.
Hope, Akpan, Gorks.
Strenta.
Yeah, there's plenty of players that he's put back into that side that you thought we won't see them again. And he has. So fair play to him. I think when you look at him on the bench, I think he always puts his arm around the players when he comes off, and I think he's trying his best to build this team spirit and bring the young players in, because they are young and hungry, like Cobb used to say.
Yeah, and the reaction that when Royston scored his goal at Leeds the other night, he ran straight over and gave Nigel a big hug.
Yeah.
I think it said a lot.
It did say a lot, because I think there's been a lot of rumours that they fell out, these personal issues, no one really knew what they was about. Atkins was quite upset about it the other day when questioned, and he said no, it was nothing to do with what's going on at the club, it was his own personal reason, it's down to him to say it, nothing to do with it. And I think, again, if you watch Atkins on the line, he always gets behind his players, whether he's thought they've been bad or not. You very rarely see him have a go at anyone. The only time he's done was Akpan and Lafondre in the newspaper, and did that get the right reaction from it? It certainly did.
I think my only real problem with Nigel Atkins has been, I have to look at certain players and think, have certain players developed in the last year? And you do wonder quite what they're doing on the training ground, because you think, has Pierce got any better on the ball? Again, we talk about it week after week. Is their decision-making any better? So that's probably the only major reason. But considering what he's had to deal with the takeover, said, I can't remember a season like this that's had this many injuries to really good championship players.
Yeah. It's just lucky that he's got a squad big enough to be able to cope with it to a certain extent. Again, it's still not his side. I don't think he's brought anyone to that club that he would have signed personally, except for maybe Wayne Bridge.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't think the other two was his signings. I think those in Garavish's, and he had to make do with what he had. Now, admittedly, most Reading managers haven't had the players at the disposal that Atkins has had, and it's took him a little while to get them going, but they're starting to move into the right direction. I just hope they can keep that going to end the season and get promoted again. And a lot of people were talking about, oh, Reading don't want to go up because there's no money.
Oh, that's rubbish. That's absolute rubbish.
Thing is, though, I don't. Even if Reading went up and got relegated again, at least you know that money is consistently coming into the club for the next 4 or 5 years.
And it preserves the academy, the Category 1 status.
And it keeps us at the top of the Championship.
New owners.
Yeah. It keeps us at the top of the Championship. Yeah. I mean, we've not been great this year, and we've still been at the top of the Championship. And we know for ourselves, the Championship is not a good league.
I understand people's arguments that, oh, it'll be rubbish watching us next year get thumped every week, but... And it would, but...
It was the same with Will.
Yeah, I mean, look at Palace.
Yeah.
Palace were getting absolutely thumped, and you thought, that squad, no way has got a chance going up. They only bought a few players, likes of Tom Ince and suddenly...
Yeah. I mean, that bottom half of that Premier League is never great. I mean, the top half, obviously, way out of our league. We don't worry about
But look
that.
At the teams Reading will be going up with. They'll be going up with, theoretically, Leicester and Burnley, I think, fairly safe to say at the moment.
Yeah, if that's what happens, are they beatable in the Premier League? Yeah, of course they are. As other teams that are up there, yeah, they're beatable. It's Palace, might stay up, Stoke, teams like that, they're all beatable, you know what I mean, on your day. And if Reading only have to maybe 3 or 4 additions, and you've got a half-decent Premier League side.
Right, well, join in, have your say. Do you think this has been Reading's most inconsistent season, or do you think there are other candidates out there?
Also, is Nigel Atkins a good man manager? Let's put that out there as well. What do you reckon?
Very much so. Look for those tweets and emails next week. But meanwhile, let's read out those tweets and emails from this week.
The View from the Tarhurst End. Recapping all this week's action.
Right, welcome back. Thank you to all of those who have sent us feedback via tweets and emails in the past couple of weeks. Very much appreciated. As I said, it's very much your show. It's by the fans, for the fans. So the more you send us, the more we can answer. And the longer these shows are, actually, better not say that, because then
those mass exodus of people sending stuff in.
But no, we're very much happy. I said, whether it's a comment on the game, if you want to introduce a topic for pub chat, so if you just want to share some memories, go for it, by all means. So you've heard the contact details. Facebook.com/Tarhurst End, Twitter @TarhurstEnd, thetarhurstend@gmail.com is the email address, and there's a couple of threads on the Raw's Rendezvous and on Hobnob Anyone. And some people have taken up those methods to contact us. We've got a couple of emails as opposed to tweets this week.
Mm.
Two, in fact. First is from Ollie. He says, good afternoon, guys. I felt before the Leeds game that Kanu up front was a good move by Adkins. He has all the attributes for it, pace, power and strength, and can also finish. I feel if he gets a run of games up front, we'll see his true potential. The negative reaction from our fan base before the game was laughable. He played up front in the reverse fixture against Leeds and did well.
I've said this about Robson Kanu since the day he came into the side. He should do better than he does sometimes, and maybe he's not a winger, because he is good, he is big, he is strong, he's got a decent touch, and in this league he's got pace. If he can finish like he did last night on a regular basis, then Lafondre will find it hard to get back in that team.
Yeah,
good luck to him. I hope he does, because I think he's got the ability, he just doesn't show it enough.
He has tried in that a few times though. I remember way back at Leicester, I think the season after we got to the playoff final, McDermott tried him up there with Noel Hunt, I think, for a bit. And he's just never quite done enough to stick. But
no, but he doesn't on the wing, does he? I mean, he had one half-decent game and then you won't see him no more.
He suits being in as part of a forward three, doesn't he? You know, the way kind of like Swansea used to play under Rodgers.
Yeah.
And like Liverpool almost play now. You know where like Raheem Sterling tends to play?
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be the sort of position that I think Kanu would flourish in, where he's not got to do the traditional completely up and down the flank work and he can cut inside.
Well, the thing with Kanu, if you look at Pogrebnak and Lafondre, now, can he run onto balls over the top? Yeah, he can. He's quick. Fonja can't because he's too small and too weak on the ball, really. And Pogrebnyak, he can, but he can't get off the floor sometimes. So when you look at that, would you say, out of the three, who would you rather have up front? And I think, on his day, I think Kanu possibly could be more of a threat than them to us.
On potential, you'd say, but just on performance, I still think Pogrebnyak's been one of our best players this season.
Yeah, consistently.
Especially given the Super Bowl.
Yeah, consistently, it's been very good. But when you look at the fact that Robson Kanu can do both what they do, but probably is he ain't a finisher like Lafondre? Definitely not. He should do better than he does. And I agree that Robson Kanu could have a future up front.
Fair enough. Right, thanks very much, Ollie. This next one's from Nick. Gents, last week I tweeted that Federici should start ahead of McCarthy at Brighton. You gave my suggestion in fairly short shrift of the podcast. This week I want to make the same suggestion. McCarthy is a superb shot stopper, but his positioning for crosses and distribution sometimes leaves a lot to be desired. I'm sorry to say it, but his mistake cost us 2 points at Brighton. He made almost exactly the same mistake Saturday, Bill coming out of his goal and flapping it across. I don't think you can blame Gunter for that. Feder deserves his chance. He's behaved admirably while out of the team, not complaining about being on the bench. I think we owe him an opportunity for a run of game that may put him in line for a chance at making the Australian team for the World Cup. I'm writing this before the Leeds game. Maybe McCarthy will redeem himself, keep a clean sheet and save a penalty. Well, didn't keep a clean sheet. Nothing didn't happened, save it anyway.
No. And conceded one for 25 yards.
Yeah. So, to be fair, I think I was pushing Federici a little bit last week. I think you and Johnny were very much in the McCarthy camp. And I think ultimately I said McCarthy said one more chance. But I couldn't complain, and I wouldn't complain if Federici came back in now.
It's a testament to the fact that we've got two good goalkeepers. McCarthy has made a few mistakes recently, which have cost us goals. But then I can remember Federici in the Premier League doing a very similar thing. So whether he'd come in and make any difference, I'm not convinced. But I think, again, McCarthy, looking early in the season, he kept us in a lot of games. And I think it'd be harsh on him to drop him just because of a few mistakes that he might have made.
It would be harsh, but I do agree that in the spirit of fairness to Federici, who is a first-team player, he's played at this level, played in the Premier League, played internationally. If this was a striker that had had five bad games, you wouldn't think twice about taking out
the team. We said this last week, if it's a centre-back made four mistakes and we could see the goals from, you'd be calling for him to be out of the side. A goalkeeper does get away from it to a certain extent, and he has cost us a few games recently. Even a goal against QPR, I thought he spilled it. A goal against Blackburn, he spilled one. Yeovil, he's come out and not got it. Brighton, he's not communicated with his defender. So there's four mistakes he's made in recent games. Should he be replaced? I think we're not losing, so it'd be harsh on him. But if he was, I wouldn't really complain about it.
Yeah, and someone said to me on Twitter, they were saying, you know, what would that do to McCarthy if you dropped him? And I said, hopefully it would toughen him up. Because it should. Yeah. Goalkeepers need to learn how to come back. I mean, look, if Joe Hart can get dropped, Alex McCarthy shouldn't be safe.
No, I think, it'd be if you're a professional footballer, you think, well, okay, I've made a few mistakes, now let's buck up my ideas. Maybe I've rested on my laurels a little bit. Other players have been dropped and come back in, Cummins for one. I mean, he was virtually booed off the pitch. Pan, he's been booed off the pitch more than once and he's come back. You know what I mean? So either you're going to put up or shut up, as simple as that.
Exactly. Well, thanks very much. Hopefully that's answered your question a bit more, Nick. And we'll see what Nigel Atkins does. Right, on to the tweets then. Andy Walker, he very kindly wrote our match report from the Brighton game. You can still check that out up on thetarleston.com. He says, it feels like we're getting more joy with 4-5-1 at the moment. Should we be employing this tactic more at home? Especially in light of Atkins' comments about playing a lone striker after the Leeds game.
No, I think if Drenton's going to play in a hole, I think you can play one up front, because he's so much of a problem to everyone, because they don't know where he's going to turn up, that one defender's taken up by making sure he's not up to anything, really.
Yeah, and we said, do you remember one of the podcasts earlier this season when Rob came on, how outdated 4-4-2 was? I know it did, you know, has got us a few results, but I still think in this modern day and age, 4-5-1 or a bit more of a fluid sort of 4-3-3 is kind of the way forward.
Especially
if you do want to play Premier League football.
Yeah, and with the wingers we've got, and the pace we've got down the wing, you can get up quickly and support that lone striker. Now, whether that's Pogrebniak or Robson Carney, I think it has to be.
I don't think it'd be Lafondre.
Well, I don't think you can do it. It's pointless. It won't happen. So there's no point in having him up front on his own. And this opens the next debate then, and saying, well, how you got your top goal scorer sat on the bench again? Because sometimes there's no impact.
And we've said, you know, fair enough, January's player of the month, both on the website and in the Championship.
Yep.
Two hat-tricks. But beyond that, good cross, I suppose, for a goal at Millwall, but
with the Yeovil one that he got, but bobbled off someone's shin.
I know, I don't think he got that one. I
don't think he should have got it.
And missed the penalty, didn't he?
And he missed a great chance before that as well. Yeah. Like I said, in the Premier League, there was games that when we got relegated against Wigan and I think it was Sunderland at home, when he should have scored and he missed Gilbert's chance.
He's a very valuable... Again,
he's a top goal scorer and that's what he's paid to do. But in some games...
use him in the right situation.
Yeah, in some games, he doesn't have enough impact to warrant a starting place, I don't think.
No. Joe Davey. Can you see Brian McDermott getting sacked this week? Who do you think will take up the playoff spots at the end of the season? I think Brian McDermott's fate is very much linked to the takeover. I think they'll bring in their own man in the summer anyway.
I think either way he's going to get the sack because, like we said last week, I think he's only had one win since he came back of garden leave or whatever he was on.
Yeah.
And they've not been good enough leads, and their fans, they're a well-supported club and they won't put up with another poor year, I don't think. Even though, realistically, that's about where they are, mid-table.
I still think, I said at the start of the season, if he was given the right backing in the right circumstances, I thought they could make the playoffs. And they're not going to end up a million miles away. They're not in relegation trouble. But
they started all right, didn't they? They started all right and then sort of slipped away more recently.
Yeah, they had a couple of big injuries as well that haven't helped them.
So poor results.
Off-field problems have died. We think we've got it bad.
Yeah, like I say, after two defeats at home as well, the confidence of the players looks shot, and that never helps anybody. So... no, I think he will get a sack, whether it be soon or end of the season. I don't think he'll be there starting next year.
I fear very much you're right, but I don't think he'll be out of work long.
No, of course not. He's won the Championship, so he's obviously a good manager.
Indeed. And as for his second point of his question, who do you think will make up the playoff spots end of the season?
Right, I think it'll be Derby, definitely.
Yeah. QPR?
Oh, I don't know. QPR,
that'd be a long way for them to fall.
It's quite a long way to fall, but they certainly look like they're a bit of backbiting and they're struggling to get results. I'm going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to say, I'm going to have to put QPR. I'll change your mind. Now, I think we Derby, QPR, Wigan and Reading. I think Forest will slip out of it.
Okay. At the moment, I'm going to have to say it as I see it. I think it's going to be Derby, QPR, Wigan and maybe Brighton. There's just something that's nagging in my head that's thinking this isn't a playoff year for Reading.
No, that we'll see.
And I'm quite happy if I sit here and we're going to Wembley. I would more than happily say I'm wrong.
Reading Wigan final. Let's put it down. Write it out now.
Yeah. Oh, no. Look at Wigan's record at Wembley. Why would you even turn up?
Well, it's got a chance.
I suppose so. Right. Thanks very much for that. Joe, Chris Hartley says, after last night's performance, do we feel that Hal Robson-Kanu is capable of playing as centre forward? Plus, how do you rate Hector's debut against Brighton? Thought he slotted straight in and looked right at home. Well, I think we've covered the Hal Robson-Kanu point, but yeah. Michael Hector touched on it briefly. I think he did very well, looked composed, looked a bit better on the ball than the likes of Gorks and Pierce.
Yeah, he's got pace as well as an attribute, and he's learning the game, is all you can say about him. And he's had a good run at Aberdeen, he's had a lot of games up there. He's obviously match fit, he's played a lot for under 21s as well, I believe. So,
yeah, scored a goal against Liverpool.
Yeah, he's got all the attributes to be a good player, and I think next year you'll see him much more regularly.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
And again, if Adkins shuffles the pack again on Saturday against Derby, I wouldn't mind if Hector was playing. I don't think he will.
It's a testament to him, really, that he's trusted in a big game like that to play centre-back. So centre-back's a big position. If your centre-back's having a bad game, you've lost the game.
And if Rennie had lost that game as well, going to Leeds on a complete downer.
I mean, he trusts him, and that's a good thing. And that's a testament to how good the player must be.
Indeed. Thanks very much, Chris. Anthony Kendrick, another regular tweeter into the show. Thanks again for getting in touch, Anthony. He says, Nigel Adkins, tactical genius or tactical gambler? Still can't work it out.
Again, I would agree with that. I can't work out either.
I'd say I'd lean more on the genius than the gambler, because I think a lot of thought goes into his pre-match tactics.
Oh, yeah, I'm not
but
saying...
But then, unfortunately, which is a lot of the time, for now, it's completely wrong.
Yeah, sometimes there's too much thought goes into it.
Yeah.
But I think, again, he's still just testing his side out. And even though we're at the back end of the season, you think probably shouldn't be. He's had so many injuries and mixing stuff up that, again, Akpan and Gorks, you wouldn't have called it this year. They'd even played a bit, wouldn't have even played.
Mm.
But he's trusted them, they've come in, they've done a job for him. I think he's just looking at what he's got and he shuffles a pack accordingly. I think we moaned at the start of the year that he was doing it randomly, and then sometimes when McCleary's had a great game or a good half hour, he's dragged him off the pitch.
Well, you see, one of my theories was over Christmas they had to sell off the Tombola.
That's what it was, yeah.
Which is why he had to start playing his random team picks. Every week.
Yeah, his random picks. Again, Mackenough, he's come back into the side and he's done a good job for him. I think he's had his hand forced by certain players, and all credit to them that they've done that.
Indeed. Derek Walmsley says, we play fluently on the road when the pressure is off, but what would you do to improve our stuttering home form?
I told you about our home form. The reason we struggle at home is because teams sit in, and in the last couple of weeks, they've got goals on the break, and then they've sat in and Reading haven't been able to break them down. Away from home, teams have to come at you because they're at home, and that's how Reading pick you off, especially with the pace in the side.
Yeah, more away points than home now.
Yeah, but it's going to happen because teams will sit in. At Derby, you might see them come and sit in this week. The only thing about playing a team at the top is they'll be thinking, if we can get rid of Reading, if we can beat Reading, that'd be another side that can't catch us. Hopefully Derby come in and try and make a game of it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come on to Derby in a little bit before we go, but they're not the most greatest goal-scoring side. They seem to rely a lot on keeping clean sheets. So, again, it's going to be a big test for likes of Drenta, Robson-Kanu, McCleary. Can they find a way to break through?
They're going to have to score early and obviously first. If they can get a goal in the first 15 minutes, you get a completely different game and Reading go and win it, will go in much easier. But if you look at the teams they've played the last couple of weeks, Yeovil, Sheffield Wednesday, Blackburn, they've all used exactly the same tactic against Reading. Sit in, try and catch them on the break. They've done it. And then all they've done for the rest of the match is try and waste time. Second half, they basically killed the game, let Reading get into no sort of flow. So Reading need to score first at home. And if they do that, then they go on to win games. But the teams are coming and sitting in. It's working for them. So I think everyone who comes down will come and try that.
Yeah, and I said, fingers crossed, they can just break down early because when Reading do get in front, they seem to do okay. But as I said, we'll come on to the Blackburn? Come to the Derby game a little bit later after these last few tweets. One of which is from Phil Saunders, who says, do you think Hal Robson-Kanu plays well up front, or do you prefer to see him out wide? Again, we've covered it, I think, on the flank of a three for me.
I'll be honest with you, sometimes I prefer not to see him because he gets on my nerves. But in general, he's got all the attributes, so go and do it. Prove everyone wrong. Show everyone you could be. Out a whole season up front.
Yeah. Laurel, would the real Reading FC please step forward? We all know they're world beaters on their day, don't we? Why so inconsistent? And Adam Dove says, your preferred lineup for the Derby game, stick or twist? We won't answer that now. We'll answer that after this.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. We left you on that cliffhanger.
Ooh.
From Adam Dove.
That's exciting.
And I should say thank you to everyone who did send us in tweets and emails, including Adam. So he said, your preferred lineup for the Derby game, stick or twist? Stick. Westy, oh, straight away.
Stick, mate. You got to stick with it. I think they're so convincing. I think with the pace and power in that team, we have all more than enough.
You probably wouldn't be tempted then to either Pavel Pogrebniak or Danny Williams gets back fit?
No. I wouldn't, because I think Williams and Guthrie hasn't really worked all season. I think Akpan, for all his faults, he just seems to keep that team plodding along. And he has got high energy and he is good in winning a tackle. And I think Guthrie needs that sort of player around him rather than Williams, who's making them breaking runs. And we said there'd been massive gaps in midfield sometimes when them two have played together. One team's to come deep and one to go forward, and there seems to be no one in the middle. So just leave it. Leave it exactly how it is. Let Drenta play in the hole and try and direct the play. And hopefully we can get a lead and you can drag them up after 70 minutes and shore things up.
Yeah, and hopefully those players get fit and they can make a difference off the bench, because we've liked difference makers, haven't we?
Yeah, of course we have. But wouldn't it be great to see Morrison, Pogrebniak, Lafondra,
Williams,
all sat on the bench thinking, wow, that is a good bench. And all of a sudden, the players that are on a pitch are thinking, I need to perform today because I'm going to be off this pitch pretty quick. Bridge even. You have all them sat on the bench, you're thinking, we've got to play well because we're coming out of this team. And getting near this business end of the season, you want to make an appearance at Wembley, you don't want to be sat on the bench doing it.
Absolutely not. Well, we are facing Derby, managed by Steve McLaren.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, we went up to Derby earlier in the season and absolutely thumped them. It was one of probably our better games this year when they were, I think, still under Nigel Clough.
Oh, they looked poor, didn't they?
Yeah. And McLaren's come in and he's really tightened them up. I mean, looking at their run of results now, they very, very rarely concede more than two goals. I mean, his first few games, they had that big 4-4 with Ipswich and then a couple of ding-dong games. But since then, it's just, you look at the goals conceded, none, none, one, 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 none, one, 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 then a four, none, one, two, three, none, 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 two, one, none. A lot of clean sheets in there.
Yeah, there's a lot of clean sheets in there. And again, recently they've not been so great. Lost two and drawn one.
Well, they haven't scored in the last three games.
They haven't scored. So they're struggling to get goals.
And basically three goals in their last six games now.
It's another nice... If Reading can beat them, then it'd be another team getting pulled back into the mix again. And I think, as I said, looking at the fixture list there, they've got Forest after that. So they're not going to want them two games as a run of defeats.
And Ipswich, for that, who are still in the hunt.
Yeah, who else they got left to play?
Charlton, Borough, Blackpool, Huddersfield, Donny, Barnsley, Watford and Leeds. So it gets a bit kinder for them after these three games.
Well, then this is three massive games for them, isn't it? Reading, Forest and Ipswich, because three defeats there and they are dragged right back into it, because that's be three rivals that have got points over them.
Yeah, and I mean, they're third in the league, and if they've got aspirations of catching Burnley,
they have to win them all.
Yeah, and that does, I think, play into Reading's hands, as you said, because it might encourage them to come and think, do you know what? We've got a bit of a cushion on the teams below us, but we might as well give this one last go.
Yep. But I mean, would you take a draw to start the match?
No. I think we've only got to win the home games.
I think we will beat them. I think we'll beat them on the day. I think we'll be better than them.
Generally a good record against Derby at home. I can remember a couple of draws, but otherwise Reading seems to have a bit of a hoodoo over them. So.
Yeah. I think we'll win on Saturday. I'm confident we're going to win. And I think we'll keep the same side.
Score prediction then?
Let's go 2-0. I think we'll beat them 2-0.
I'm going to say a more cagey affair. I'm going to say it's going to be 1-0 Reading.
Well, one of us is wrong.
Derby, quickly before I go, Derby memories. Derby was the second game I ever watched for Reading. It was my first league game.
Right.
1-0 with a hilarious own goal from Kavanagh. The game was even more memorable. For some of you might remember this, Uri Geller getting fans to hold up
cards.
This was, so this is 95, so it's going back a bit. Uri Geller who was once upon a time a celebrity Reading fan.
Yeah.
Big chum of Sir John.
Yeah.
Came to the stadium. If you don't know Uri Geller, Ben Spoons. Bit of a psychic.
I think everyone knows Uri Geller, don't they, surely?
You like to hope so. But educating them if you don't. Anyway, came to Elm Park and we got there and I was sat in the old Norfolk Road stand because my dad, I was young, I was only eight, so he didn't want me to stand on the terrace every week. Wish I had the option now. anyway, there were coloured cards underneath the seats in the south. I think there were three.
Red, yellow, blue.
I think. Yeah, all red, yellow, white. They're colour cards. And Uri Geller sits in front of the stand and he's, I'm going to transmit the colour of this card to your mind. And on the count of three, I want you to all hold up this coloured card. Yeah. Obviously, he did it. And half the cards, everyone's holding up a completely different card. Ridiculous.
I do remember. I think he's somehow trying to claim victory as well because there was more yellows than there was anything
something
else.
Absolutely like that.
It was a bit random. But I'd see you again not so long ago in Costco's, funnily enough. And,
there you go.
And believe it or not.
Did you get his autograph?
Yeah, no, I didn't. But believe it or not.
Did he walk past the spoons aisle?
This is not a lie. He was in the cutlery section as I was walking down and I was so tempted to say, don't touch that spoon. But I thought, he's probably heard it before, so I'll let it go.
Yeah, Yuri Geller up there amongst celebrity Reading fans that also include Chris Tarrant.
Yep.
And I think that's about it.
Michael Parkinson, sort of.
He's fairly local, isn't he?
He's been there a couple of times.
Well, he's probably watching everywhere. He's probably watching Barnsley.
Yeah, it may be. I was going to say, Derby. I've got a Derby memory. Derby away, got relegated from the Premier League and we got promoted that season.
1-4-0. Oh.
No, they hammered us. I think it'd be 3-1 or 3-0 or something like that. It's our first game.
Oh, in 2002. In the Championship. Yeah. Ravinelli was played.
Ravinelli scored, right? And he was right in front of me when he scored and celebrated. And I called him a few choice names, right? They weren't nice. It wasn't Silver Fox, right? Anyhow, the stewards next to me heard me and he said to me, if I hear you say anything for the rest of this match, you are out. Right? And no matter what happened, I did not move for the rest of the game. Proper bottled it.
I thought you were about to say I gave him 2 barrels and was out.
I proper bottled it. So there you go. That's my claim to shame, that is.
Yeah. Oh, God. I remember looking at that game with all the hype. I think John Mackey was playing and...
Yep.
Bright new era, and then we got thumped.
And the laughable thing about that was, that year, we got thumped, and all the Derby fans were laughing at us. And I seem to remember the next year we went back there, we thumped them, and they were left at half-time. So we had the last laugh in that one.
Yeah, Reading Derby games usually entertaining, so we'll go back to the days of Marco Gabbiadini.
I was like, he was a good player, was Gabbiadini?
He was. Very good. Paul Pescasolido. Did he play for them, or did he play for Birmingham?
He played for everyone.
Probably. Anyway, I think now that we're talking about Paul Pescasolido and Gabbiadini, it's probably time for us to go.
There were two names I wasn't expecting to turn up today, I must admit.
No, me neither. Thank you very much for tuning in this week. You will be able to hear the Tarlhurst End podcast extra with myself and Charles Watts on Friday, where we'll get an update on some of those injury lines on the likes of McCleary and Danny Williams, Pavel Pogrebniak. So tune in for that. It's usually only 15, 20 minutes long. So if you don't like us rabbiting on...
But then would you have listened to this to find out that was happening on Friday?
Don't know, maybe fast-forwarded to the end. Hoping for the post-credit scene.
Maybe.
So check that out. Loads of content up on the Tarlhurst End website. Go to thetarlhurstend.com. And as I mentioned, please get in touch if you've got any ideas, any suggestions. And if you've got feedback as well, guys. This show's 26 episodes old, but that's not really that old. I mean, how many episodes of the old fancast did you get out?
In general, I think we've done over 150 between the different websites.
Yeah. I mentioned the old podcast earlier as well. There was a little Twitter tit for tat. One of our listeners, who I won't name, said, I've really enjoyed the show much more since that big time Fordham's gone.
Oh,
which Johnny didn't take too kindly to.
Did he? Johnny no. Big time. Didn't like it, did he?
He said, no. He said, oh yeah, I'm too big time for that now. So he's gone massively downhill since I've gone.
Funnily enough, Mr. Fordham said to me the other week, he said, if I need a rating, it'd come on anytime we like.
Rating saved. Yeah. The big guys. I said to him, couldn't afford his wages. We've had to employ the lawyers just in case you let anything slip, Westy.
The point is, Mr. Fordham, he had no career till I turned up.
Here we go.
And now he's in London.
Got him to an award nomination as well.
Got him to award nomination. He wouldn't have got that if it weren't for me. What thanks do you get? He's sunning himself in London and I'm in with you, mate.
Yeah, well, we've issued the challenge, Johnny. Come and come and grace us with your presence, and you're more than welcome.
It's typical Fordham. He's all talk and no action. Always has been, always will be.
And on that note, with the challenge issued to said Fordham, we bid you farewell. Guys, thanks very much for tuning in this week. And here's to 3 points against Derby.
Come on, you guys.